Here's a song I got for you. Levy and Bells, Sam Donald and Quinnen. Guess what, New York? It's time to start winning.
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
I feel like we're turning into a little bit of a musical episode here, what with the song to Quinn in there, and then as that instrumental was playing, one Lindsay Rhodes seated to my immediate left started humming. You could do basically the unplugged version of that. Do you want to do it now? Football.
We're starting in different places. You're like the beatbox. It's a disaster.
And I'll do the lyrics for it. Hello. Well, anyway, hi and hello and welcome to the DDFP. I hope all's well wherever you are. Here in Studio 66, we're over the moon to once again see, after way too long, faces of NFL Network. He's watching on Total Access. If you watch Total Access at all, you're very likely to see Lindsay Rhodes. I'm saying.
Why did we have to add that disclaimer?
I'm saying if you ever even look at it, I mean, there's a high likelihood. I would think
if
that
you don't, we don't blame you. Then you haven't seen her, but now you're going to listen to her, and there's that.
Let's not start off with a Tom Brady style chip, Lindsay. That's what we're doing already. See,
yep, it's this massive.
It's what Chaz Barkley told us when we were little kids about athletes are not role models is not true, because look at what you're picking up. The GOAT starts in with like, we suck, no one likes us, everything else.
And it rubs off on everyone.
And now you're doing that. Like, I guess if you want to watch Total Access, you know?
Well, I feel like that's kind of what you said and not me, but.
I've called for Joe Namath. We need some more Joe Namaths in 2019 and beyond. We need some swagger back, you know?
I loved that piece that you did for Total Access.
Stop it,
you. Apparently nobody who's listening saw, according to you.
That's not how it was intended. Hey, listen, let's set that behind. Let's put that behind us.
We're going to move on.
Much to get to. We have game of football to talk. Also, game of life and game of fictional life, the life that exists in Westeros. For those who are still even alive.
Which is, let's be honest, where I think a lot of us are actually living right now in our heads.
I agree, and I want to give it its due, and I want to take some time and have a conversation with you as a lover of the Seven Kingdoms. And then also behind the glass, Eddie Spaghetti. Mm. He's putting his reputation on the line in defense of Episode 5. Perhaps the most controversial, if nothing else. Right, Spaghetti?
It's like three episodes in a row. They have the lowest Rotten Tomatoes grade of any Game of Thrones episode.
Three in a row? Episode three? People didn't like episode three?
Not the critics didn't. Rotten Tomatoes.
The critics.
Did not.
Yeah. I didn't love the fight against the dead.
What? Why? What?
Because it got lame. I loved the first half hour. I loved it. I thought that the stillness at night and the snow and what's off in that black beyond, you knew there was evil on there, but waiting to see it emerge and everything else, wonderfully done. In the first 15 minutes or so, the battle was excellent. What are they called again, Spaghetti? The bad guys, Khal Drogo's people?
The Dothraki.
I forget every name of things of all these things. When they ride off with the fire things, and then they get extinguished.
Yep.
Awesome.
Amazing. The cinematography I thought was awesome.
Then Fat Sam can't fend for himself, but then for a half an hour he lays on bodies and fends off all the dead people.
How is he alive? Yes, I agree
all
with
right,
you.
So that's bad.
There was a suspension of belief that needed to. Suspension of disbelief? How did I just mess up that phrase?
Well, I don't think you can be technically wrong, since we're talking about a fantasy show. I don't disbelief the reality of the unreality. Let's talk Game of Football, and then we'll dig in on Game of Thrones. First question for you, Lindsay Rhodes, you've been around the block here watching these high-end, tenured QBs, some of them Hall of Fame QBs. They don't typically love the idea of their team bringing in a talented youngster to presumably replace them sooner rather than later. Where do you come down on Joe Flacco moving from Baltimore, where he just kind of sort of trained up Lamar Jackson, lost the starting gig there, moves a mile high to take over there, and now they draft Drew Lock, and he's in the same situation and is saying, well, I'm not here to coach the kid. I'm not here to train him on anything. I'm here to win games. How say you?
Yeah, I don't fault him at all for feeling that way. I think he probably should have pretended or like chosen different words. Just the public relations aspect of it, I think he should have been smarter than to know, like, what you say is, you know, if there's any way that I can help him, then I'm, you know, I'm here to help all of my teammates. I'm here to do what's best for the Broncos, blah, 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 whatever. Talk about the quarterback room or, you know, how someone helped you when you were young or whatever. Like, there are things that you can say. And I think that we would all understand that behind closed doors, that you're there to win a job and that you are there to maintain your career and that you have a lot of learning to do and might not have a lot of extra time to bring Drew Locke along because you're trying to get yourself up to speed in a brand new offense in a brand new city. I don't think anybody would fault him for any of that stuff. So maybe there should have been like a qualifier at the beginning that sounded really nice and welcoming to Drew Locke.
I like that.
And then the twist where he makes it, but I'm also spending a lot of time myself. And so, you know.
I think that's exactly, because it to me, in my brain, it has solidified that you must, of course, if you're a tenured guy, especially if you're a Hall of Famer, Joe Flacco is not that, but history, the last three decades, a year ago around this time, the Steelers took Mason Rudolph. Ben Roethlisberger didn't like that. Why'd you take somebody this high? I'm still here. I'm going to be here for a few years. And he got a lot of flack for doing that, then ended up, apparently, according to Rudolph himself, helping the kid along in his rookie season. But Joe Montana didn't like Steve Young being behind him. And because of that rift, Montana wound up getting shipped to KC. Brett Favre didn't like Aaron Rodgers being there and right. The retirement, now I'm unretired and all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, it's not like we haven't – and Tom Brady didn't like Jimmy Garoppolo looming there, and he got traded across the country to San Francisco. It doesn't make it right to say I'm not responsible for that, but I also get, especially if you have a huge ego, which you have to have by definition to be an NFL quarterback, that you would not probably want anyone reminding you, yeah, my football mortality is a lot closer than I want it to be.
Well, and it's sort of the question itself is so offensive that sort of implies like, hey, are you going to do everything you can to train your replacement, who then I will start asking questions about when he will replace you and how soon you should hit the bench. And like, there's no, you know, we're not careful about people's feelings in this business in terms of the questions and the conversations that we have. So it's a fair reminder that Joe Flacco is a human being who has feelings and is likely offended by a good chunk of the conversation we're having surrounding Drew Locke, because it just presumes that he is there for a finite amount of time, at which point, hopefully, if Drew Locke doesn't suck. And that's the only reason that he wouldn't take over. It would be if Drew Locke sucked. It wouldn't be if Joe Flacco was good enough, because obviously you're just there as a stopgap. Like, the whole thing just assumes all sorts of offensive
you're exactly
things
right.
If you're Joe Flacco.
But by the way, you're exactly right. All you have to do to get the heat off of yourself if you're Joe Flacco or any other guy is just say, like, oh, yeah, and quick. Questions a kid has, I'm going to be here for him and everything else, and then just don't do it if you don't want to do it. That'll be a slow burn. No one's going to know about that. That's not going to make the public at any point, if ever. That's never going to come out that you weren't especially helpful to the guy who's there to replace you.
I mean, it's somewhat comical, though, right? In sports, we expect people to behave totally differently than we would any other line of work. Like, if NFL Network hired a host and said, like, hey, you know, we think that she might be a good replacement for you on Total Access down the line. Can you show her everything you know? Like, no, you know, I mean, I'll be friendly, I suppose. But like, what? That's just such a weird dynamic to insert into a workplace and then expect the person to just be like smiley and happy about it is bizarre.
That's boy, this is a lucid conversation right at the top, Eddie Spaghetti. You've met your match. I'd be very careful with what you have to say about Game of Thrones before we get to that. But Drew Locke, it makes me think. So I assume he's an Andrew. If you were Andrew, would you go Andy or Drew?
I kind of like Drew.
Huh.
Drew feels more modern now.
Andy, yeah.
Like, growing up, it was more Andy. Maybe it's because I grew up with Andys and Andrews in my class that it feels like Drew feels a little bit different, but not so different that it's a little bit just like weird.
What do you think about, like, I just saw a list that a lot of people have named their daughters Khaleesi,
that's Daenerys. Unfortunate. Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
Yeah, maybe should have waited to see where this was going.
Too soon. We're not getting into it yet. Von Miller says it's hard to dislike Tom Brady. They were at the Derby together.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you come down on the issue
totally
of pro
agree.
Football? I agree.
I totally agree that it's
like
hard
Tom
to.
I like Tom Brady very much.
I mean, he just seems very likable. You know, there's nothing. And the thing that's crazy is he seems pretty nerdy. Like, considering that he is mm-hmm. this insanely handsome human being, for him to be as nerdy as he is endearing. And so I think that adds to all of it. Like,
Von Miller, also a nerd. And he would admit that himself, I think.
Yeah, but he's not. Like, so, I mean, I get it that it's like, he's like
he
the cool guy
stuff.
Who has nerdy things.
Right.
Which actually doesn't make you nerdy. Like, Tom Brady says things sometimes that are, I don't quite know how to articulate what I mean, I guess. But there's something where you go,
it's his essence.
Just kind of nerdy. Like, he just is. I think Von Miller is a cool guy who is in his own, like, being. He is just genetically a cool guy who owns all of his interests and then can, with a great amount of confidence, say, I like chickens. You know, like,
yeah,
and,
I hear you.
And just rock with that. But I think that that's ultimately cool.
I think, well, I'm a nerd because, well, not just because I like Star Wars and those things,
yeah,
but
that
also
definitely qualifies, by the way.
I mean, I don't think I need to be attacked, but you think Darth Vader would beat the Night King in a fight?
You know, I just think, Okay. That now we're going down a real like nerd wormhole here.
Do you think that Drogon is the name of the living dragon spaghetti?
Correct.
Would he beat Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon in a fight? Lindsay Rhodes, you have the little ones. Who would win that fight?
I have the little ones. So I haven't really – we haven't done a lot of How to Train Your Dragon, and I think my husband watched that with my son. So I kind of – I know what you're talking about and who you're talking about, but I don't know Toothless's quirks and
– Toothless would defeat Drogon. Hot take right there.
But why? Explain your take.
Because he's faster. He's more nimble in the sky. And he shoots like – he doesn't shoot fire. He like shoots these targeted kind of these balls of energy at people.
Oh.
Kind of thing. At people. But in this case, it would be at a fellow dragon. Anyhow, my issue is, that's fine. If Von Miller wants to be friends with Tom Brady, but we need to get a little more WWE going in the NFL. We got to get away from this jive of the jersey swap on the field. We as fans have deluded ourselves into believing that these are our heroes and whoever we're playing are our arch nemeses, and that is true for the guys on the field. When you immediately undermine that by like, let's do our shirts together, like, no, we don't want that. We want you to hate each other.
You and my husband could have this conversation mm-hmm. together because this drives him crazy too. And he is also of the mind of like, so you do a sportsmanship, like you do the handshake at the end just enough to qualify to be a good sport, but you have to look upset the entire time. Mm-hmm. Like my husband hates it when people are smiling with the team that just beat them after the end. That bugs him no end.
I love hockey. I love the end of every playoff series, the handshake, but those guys look disgusted to be having to do it.
Right.
These guys with smile, and they get it with my phone now. No! You guys just played each other for 3 hours. You're supposed to hate each other.
Yeah. I mean,
not cool.
It doesn't bother me to that extent because I could see how you could potentially give your all and then at the end say, okay, my all was that. And this, I don't know. I guess if I was thoroughly invested, I would definitely be the kind of teammate that would be devastated after a loss and would take it way too seriously. And I'd be mad at the teammates that were, like,
you know what? That's what we
corner.
Need.
So I get that. But as a fan, it doesn't bother me. I don't
we
know why
need,
that is.
But you know what, though? That's the answer. Each team needs somebody to police his teammates and be like, nope, and go around and knock the jersey out of the hand. So when they try to hold up Odell's Brown, no, you don't touch that, you know?
No swaps.
Yeah, that's it. Russell Wilson bought his mom a house for Mother's Day. I don't know
sure
if you heard.
Did.
Russell's very rich now. What's the nicest thing you ever did for your mom on Mother's Day or otherwise?
I had my mom. I sent a masseuse to my mom's house to give her a massage for this Mother's Day, and I thought that was kind of nice until I realized that I should have just sent a new house to her house, apparently. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the big gift this year, Mike Davis and Russell Wilson.
Mike Davis, too.
He did, too.
Now I feel shown up. I didn't even do the masseuse bit.
There, I feel like
that would cross a line for me.
Really?
Send my mom a masseuse.
The cross gender makes it.
I don't know.
Weird,
maybe that would play a factor for me. You know, or I could
send
pay
a female masseuse,
or
and it's less.
Or I pay my old man like $20 or $40. Like, nope. Hey, massage.
That does cross the line.
That would be weird.
Well, yeah, and also probably not a really great massage for your mom. Like, who wants like somebody who doesn't know how to give a massage rubbing them?
You don't know what my old man's up to. You know how he spent his 80 years.
But that's why that's a bad idea in a lot of different ways.
Tom Brady's about to turn 42, or he will by the end of summertime. The all-time record for a 42-year-old man playing pro football in touchdown passes, 6 by George Blanda. Predict how many touchdown passes Tom Brady throws this year.
Oh, okay. What week does he pass 6?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, that's a more fun
so
way
week
of
two.
Asking.
Week 2, he passes yeah, right. 6. And then, gosh, I don't know. What's his average? Like,
he goes for about 35 every year. Figure about like a little less than – it goes for 30, 35. So figure, you know, 2.5, 3 a week.
Let's see. Brady, he has – 1, 2 – looks like he has about – no, he's more upper 20s. 28, 23, 28, 26, 24, 28, 25, 28, 32, 29.
Okay, so 29. 28 sounds like it's like roughly our cap?
Yeah, he's around like that upper 20s, lower 30s range. Obviously, he has the outlier with the 50. He has a couple like 36s, but yeah, he's mostly upper 20s, low 30s.
And more recently, upper 20s.
Right.
But I'm trying to think of a fun way to ask this question. Tom Brady, much more likely, Tom Brady exceeds his age or hits his age in touchdown passes.
No.
Or Patrick Mahomes doesn't reach his age in touchdown passes. He's going to regress this year.
Patrick Mahomes doesn't hit his age.
He's
no,
not going to hit like 23.
Neither is more likely. What? I don't understand that. Those are awful options.
I know. That's a fun game though. What age?
Neither.
Well, to go back to the how quickly he'll get 6. The week 1 he's playing the Steelers. So that must mean he must light up the Steelers then for 4, and then the Dolphins.
No, because 6 you could go 3-3. You could go 2 and then 4. I don't know.
Dolphins can do. But Steelers and then Jets week 3. Steelers and Jets at 2 or 3 aren't bad defenses. That could be tough for him.
By the way. By the time, yeah, that's the Steelers. It's going to be a month of, and it's already begun, but the whole month is going to be devoted to we're a different team. We don't have any distractions in the locker room. We're all about the 53 men in this locker room and all that stuff. Then they go to Foxborough and they're going to get destroyed. I wonder how long they can hold on to that. Yeah, that was our mulligan. Now week 2, we're really going to start playing as a team.
Do you think that they really will get destroyed?
They just do not have a track record against Brady. I know they knocked him off in December last year, but Brady v. Steelers is not a it's embarrassing for me to say,
but like
to be so owned by one guy. Well, I mean, the last time we saw him, it's a completely different team, but both teams are pretty different. But when they went up there for that title game a couple of years ago, they just got humiliated.
I don't see them getting humiliated. I could see them losing. I see them losing, but I see it being – close.
All right, I hope you're right, because they have to be able to take away something. If that game undermines a month's worth of all the rhetoric about how we're a team and there are no distractions and no individuals, if they get whipped, it's going to be a gut punch to have to overcome in the next 16 weeks.
Well, they'll be the team that has to figure out what the Patriots are even going to look like, though. Like, because
that's so true.
Who knows without Gronk? I mean, I think, you know, we keep talking about them replacing Gronk. And somebody suggested on Total Access recently, what if they essentially don't and they just redo what they do offensively? And
the early signs are that they're getting big receivers and all that sort of stuff. That's the talk right now, that they're not going to try and target a tight end to take those touches,
exactly,
but spread that out among the wide
so
receivers.
So Ben Watson comes in, he does typical tight end things, you know,
yeah,
more
yeah,
like blocking or whatever, but he's not there, obviously, to take Rob Gronkowski's spot. So maybe just somebody else in the offense.
Yeah, he's the best tight end of all time. There is no replacing the greatest tight end of all time.
Kyle Rudolph's available now, too, though. Don't forget about that.
And wouldn't that just be so New England?
Yeah.
I mean, it just feels like such an obvious thing.
There are rumors that Pittsburgh's going to take a run at him as well. We'll see. I mean, the situation's going to be who's going to be able to fit him under the cap at this point in the year when most teams have spent their money and don't have much room there. We talk about August and the compelling storylines that go on there. Of course, Hard Knocks covers those better than anyone else. When it applies to just one team, Lindsay Rhodes, we have our Final Four now. We now know what the Final Four is, and it does not include the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm glad as
a
Steelers.
Wait, time out. I need to be backed up here. Yes. We honestly do.
Is that right, Spaghetti? That this is a firm Final Four? These are not floating
names? You're breaking
news
to me here.
Yeah, one. I forgot what team was the fifth one, but they backed up with the four. I mean, it's the Giants, Oakland, Washington, and Detroit. That's
all right, put those in order for
me. Giants, Oakland, Washington, Detroit?
Detroit Lions.
No. Okay, they're gone.
I think DC.
By they're four out of four, easily. They're easily fourth.
100%.
You don't want to see? I'm fascinated. What goes on with Matt Patricia?
He wouldn't say a word. No. He's Belichick 2.0. It's lame.
I'm not fascinated yet. I mean, there's, you know, maybe they could build some fascination for me, but no, I don't think there's any chance.
Who are the storylines then? Who would even be interesting to follow? Matt Stafford has a real life thing going with his wife and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, for characters, for who's funny and everything else. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who would even emerge for the Lions in that way.
I mean, it's usually somebody that isn't really even on our radar to start with. So I'm sure that there would be people there, but they need to worry about bringing the ratings in because of an interest that already exists. Like, you have to have people that will tune in to watch some sort of craziness play out and then also be introduced to other storylines that they end up caring about. But there's nothing there for the Lions.
What do you think
right
about
now.
DC?
Yeah.
If Dan Snyder's around a lot, I'd love to see what that's like.
Would
I'd love
they
to
let
see that energy.
Do that?
Sure, Jerry. I assume that's the will of the owner. Jerry Jones was all over it with the Cowboys.
The way people have talked about Jay Gruden being on the hot seat this year, I cannot imagine Washington inviting cameras in. It just feels like that could put him in an even worse position. Once things are revealed and now you have outside pressure, like if what happened with Hugh Jackson last year and the assistant coaches happened in any kind of meeting with Jay Gruden, then you've undermined him before the season even starts. I don't think you can afford that if you're the Redskins.
Yeah, you watch the rookie Dwayne Haskins sees what that doesn't intrigue me at first blush. In fact, I said Lions. I'd rather watch the Lions than Skins, but I guess that would be my number three.
So that leaves us with Oakland and
the Giants.
Okay. So it's obviously one of those two. I think Mike Mayock would threaten people's lives to get out of doing Hard Knocks. I really do. I think that's the number one choice for me. That's what I would like to see is Oakland. I'd like to see Gruden. I'd like to see that Mayock-Gruden dynamic play out. I think all of their new first-round picks.
What about Antonio Brown and Vontaze Burfict in practice against
all
each other?
All of it. Derek. And how?
Derek who?
I think all of the elements there that's television that I would absolutely watch way more than the Giants. So I know that the Giants will have that whole New York built-in thing, and that would be appealing for HBO.
I'd like
too.
To. I'm interested in how it plays out, Eli and Daniel Jones. But if you know better than I do, having bounced off both of those guys probably a little bit more than I have. But they are in terms of comportment. Publicly say nothing. They go out of their way to be vanilla as can be. That wouldn't. So it would be fun to hear how that goes, but I don't think it would be that
much. It would
much.
Be, as a Giants fan, it would be the most boring season of Hard Knocks in existence with the Giants, I think.
Right.
It's the
Saquon's a lovely guy,
he's
but
not
he
fun.
Wouldn't. Right.
No.
Saquon wouldn't make it fun.
Odell's not there. The funniest guy.
Why not Cleveland? Because they just did it. They're not going to
I was
going to
say
on,
the
right.
funniest guy on the Giants would probably be Evan Ingram, who we had in here a couple weeks ago. He might be the most, you know, the biggest personality on the team, but it's a pretty.
Ooh, we got to get Evan Ingram back, too.
Yeah.
Maybe after the finale of Thrones.
It would just be him and it would be Gettleman just being an idiot, really.
We mentioned Jay Gruden. We know, and you've just mentioned John, too. Meantime, the Watt brothers are doing some sort of Ultimate Tag Now TV show. Mm-hmm. Chris Long, in a world of guys, a man, and his brother Kyle.
Ooh.
Is a great fella, both funny guys. You have the Bennett brothers,
yes.
both deeply funny guys and
yes.
and good, in fact, great humans and so on. Lindsay Rhodes, which football family would you, and the P Peyton and Eli and Archie and those guys. Who would you most want to go on a week's vacation with?
On a vacation. Okay. Because there are so many different ways that you could finish that sentence that would change the answer, right? Like
road trip. Drive across the country.
Mm-hmm.
This is a week vacation. You don't have to share a room.
Do the Gronks count?
Sure. Okay. If you want them to.
Because they might be the answer. The Gronk Cruise.
No. No.
Too much.
No, that's like I'm back in college and I feel all the peer pressure to stay out until the bar actually closes when all I really want to do is go home at like midnight.
I don't want to do another keg stand.
No. Yeah, no.
Come, you got to do it, bro. That would get tiresome by
going on vacation with the Gronk sounds like my nightmare, but that tells you everything about where I stand in my life right now. Like I would be so tired.
So make your choice.
Okay, so the Bennett brothers are what popped into my head first, but then you said the Longs, and I think that the Longs actually would be very interesting because I think you could have – well, you could with both of them. Okay, I'm going to – so here's the thing. I think you could have very interesting, smart conversations with both sets of those brothers, which would appeal to me on a vacation. Like sit around at the end of the night, have a drink, have a conversation about whatever, and then they bring up points that you haven't thought about before but are also very funny and, you know, can create that entertainment dynamic too.
Chris is a jack of all trades. He can, it seems, can talk about just about anything. He loves to talk uniforms and he loves country music and he loves, the Game of Thrones. He can do a lot of stuff. Kyle's funny, but he likes to talk about NASCAR. And so,
I can't do that. But here's the thing. I think that the Bennett brothers, they do that kind of, they're funny where you feel like you never know if they're being serious or not. Like you can't totally read them. Like,
Michael,
are we on
so
right now?
Deadpan.
Are you being serious? Exactly. Right. And so that would be hard for me. Like, are we serious? Is this serious now? And so I think I'm going to go with the Longs for that reason. Cause I think they bring a lot of the same things to the table, but I need to know where I stand. When are we joking and when are we being serious? And let's, you know, turn off the masks.
Ah, see, I go tie, but I'm going to tell the Bennetts what you said when I see either of them next.
I can throw out another dark horse brother group, Travis and Jason Kelce. Those would be pretty fun too, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Good call, yeah. I've never met Jason, but Travis is delightful, that's for
sure. Is he?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Very fun guy.
I've never met Travis.
Yeah. Mitchell and Jeff Schwartz. How about those two, too? Well, if nothing else, you'd eat well. Yeah. Those two guys, man, they love to cook. The NBA draft lottery at the time of this recording is happening tonight. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite Lindsay Rose? In fact, let's go win, play, show on this. Give me your top three.
Okay.
Favorite sporting events in the calendar year that involve no actual sports? NBA draft lottery?
No. I mean, like, I like that. Like NFL draft falls into this category.
Start a free agency in the NFL?
Yeah, to me, they're all going to be NFL related. It used to be signing day. I used to love signing day.
You really don't care that much about the other ones, or you just don't find the non-actual games of the other sports compelling?
So what's happened to me since I started working here is that slowly over the years of working here, other sports have kind of fallen off my radar. Because I think it's just a self-preservation thing. Like 5 days a week here, NFL all the time, plus Sunday, the games. It's like, it's just a constant thing so that when I'm not here, I don't want to go home and watch a different sport. I want to watch a Game of Thrones, or I want to watch something totally different that's out of the sports realm. So for me, or like spend time with my kids or whatever. So
I was just going to say, I think that's the factor that
that's 100%
kind of sleeping
true.
On. Once you start making the babies,
yeah,
it's kind of hard to find time. Well, you can carve out Sundays. I got to do this. This is my job. It's hard to then justify. Also, Saturday, I got to watch this LSU game.
Well, and for me, I have to be all in. So for baseball, when I covered baseball, I really loved baseball, but I'm the kind of baseball fan that has to score the game in order to remain interested in the game. Like, not enough happens, so I have to get really invested in the minutia of what's happening in order for it to maintain my interest. And then I think just the time commitment of the investment for me. I like to know a lot about stuff, and that's how I get invested. I want to know everything there is to know. And if I can't invest the time to do that, then I can't just drop in on a game here and then a game in a couple of weeks and care.
Let's keep it to pro football. This could never happen because too many people would get embarrassed and it would create feuds and everything. But if we sat down, everybody who, what do they call it? Forward-facing personalities or whatever, talent or whatever they call it.
Okay.
Who do you think, if we said this, just in a fundamental, like who knows the most in just basic terms about what's happening in the NFL, if all of us had to sit down and write down NFL and then just do like a graph kind of a thing. NFL, then the two, now underneath that, write the two conferences. Now under that, write the divisions. Now under that, write the four teams in each of those divisions. Now name as many people on those teams that you can for each of the 32 franchises. Who would do the best? Who would do the worst? And where would you finish?
Ooh.
You don't, maybe don't want to say who you think would do the worst.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there.
Because you think it would be me?
No, not at all. No. And, but so just keeping it real, the fact that like you do this year, like week in, week out, like you do this all year long. Mm. So you have to stay on top of it. For me, that's the thing. I love doing Total Access because I have to stay on top of it. So every single day, you know, every little bit of news that's come through. So
you're picking yourself.
So there's no,
okay,
no, no.
That's fine.
No, but I'm saying that gives people like you and me an edge and a leg up in this category because you don't go through free agency in the draft and whatever and then show up in August and go, okay, now who's on what team again? Like you have it. You live it every single day.
Mm. Be a fun exercise to do, wouldn't it?
It would be. Oh my gosh, like an intern test, except for employees.
Right. Spaghetti, who do you think would win? Don't say who would lose, unless you want to. If you want to pick who would lose.
Stats and research. Anyone from
no,
that department?
No, I said the people on camera. Those pets, their job is to know that.
He did say that.
Who's someone that I think would know this? Maybe one of the anyone from the draft, any part of our draft crew, because they have to study their rosters to know what roster holes they have. You could do really well.
That's
but
true.
But I think that, like, there's a chance that like DJ, yes, Lance, Bucky, those guys that's might good, know the rosters because they're missing pieces.
That's a good call.
Hmm.
I think
okay,
Daniel Jeremiah would. I think you're right. Because you could go through every single position in an orderly fashion. Okay, let's go every team, division by division, and then every single position, he could fill them out because of the draft. You're
apparently
totally right.
Two people in Studio 66 have forgotten.
I said you would do really well.
That Dave is vain, and Dave, the correct answer should be Dave, even if you don't believe it.
Well, I said that you would do well.
Thank you. Okay, let's.
I just didn't like.
So your number one
a
NFL
declarative sentence. You'd be number one, Dave.
Thank you. Number one NFL draft is your favorite sporting event.
Yeah, I love the draft.
March Madness would be up there.
No,
the start
that
of
is
free
a sporting. But that is a sporting event.
No,
that's
no,
the tournament. That's like saying the Super Bowl is not a sporting event.
No, March Madness seeding. I'm sorry. The like when they do the
oh,
selections
it, yes, okay,
thing. You know. Or no, Final Four in college
like
football.
Like I said,
maybe
for me,
Trump
it's said, all NFL.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go NFL draft, but I love that NBA draft lottery. It's exciting, especially with a year like this, because Zion is going to be a difference maker, you assume. And so it'll be fun to see who lands him, especially if it's the Knickerbockers, right, Spaghetti?
14% chance, so I'm crossing my fingers.
That seems too low.
They actually just switched it from last year. It used to be the top what had a 25, I think, and they made four, the top bottom four teams have an equal percentage chance.
All right, I don't understand the lottery.
You and me both.
I don't get it. That actually doesn't appeal to me, and it didn't appeal to me when I did follow the NFL, the NBA really closely. So I'm going to, even though I've admitted I'm not invested in it at all right now, I disagree with your take.
I feel like, though, I like the spirit of it because it's supposed to discourage. The reason they do it, obviously, is so that you don't tank once you're out of the playoff picture. Let's just throw the season so that we wind up with this removes your ability to do that. But it's imperfect. It hasn't exactly worked. Some people think that once you're eliminated, that it should be based on your winning percentage so that you're incented to keep trying to win. And if you win once eliminated, that then you should earn the top pick. That's a little too wonky for me.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't it almost always plays out, like, in the percentages? You just have, like, weird quirks where every once in a while somebody gets somebody out of order. I don't know. I've found it to be mostly lacking in drama.
Can I tell you my idea? I've told it. I've told it to other people. I'm not sure you've heard it. I'm going to share it with you now, though, Lindsay Rhodes. I think that this would be great in football, and you can apply it to the other ones too, other sports, is you do a head-to-head the loser bowl. You have the two worst teams play each other.
Okay.
In between the title games and the Super Bowl.
For the right to have the number one pick?
Right. And the winner gets it.
Got it.
Now you're incented to show up and do your best and try and get it. Now, in basketball, maybe it's a Final Four, shameful four, a flawed four or something like that. You do it like that, and you have a tournament between the four worst, and whoever wins it gets the first overall. What about that idea?
I think it's a great theory.
How fun. Who wouldn't watch that?
If you could do that in a way where nobody would get hurt. Because nobody wants, even for the number one pick, you don't want to.
You've been talking to Sean O'Hare. That's what he said. But I said, that stinks. Well, too bad if you get the same
Sean's
as anything
just
else.
Brilliant, and we have the same take. Because, like, you don't want, if you, let's say you do have a quarterback or a running back or whatever, anyone that actually is important gets hurt in that game. Now you have to fill that spot with.
It goes back to our conversation about Joe Flacco or anybody else. If you are the incumbent QB, are you going to go out there and try and win the game so that they can draft your replacement first overall? Oh, there's Tua. Hey, go have a good game right now, Josh Rosen or Ryan Fitzpatrick, because if you do, we'll get Tua. You know what I say back to that? Part of the strategy for the coaches. It's the same thing. Like, we run the ball really well, but this team stuffs the run. Like, okay, now you got to be a good coach and figure out your way around that. That's all. It's a good idea.
How do we play without playing?
Maybe we do, like, one-on-one based tournaments and, like, we do, like, stuff like –
What if you do it like a trivia or like something? So you do something competitive, but it is a no risk.
Connect Four. A big Connect Four tournament to see who gets the first overall pick. All of a sudden, NFL teams all over the place trying to sign Dave Damashek. I'm a expert Connect Four player. All right. Enough about this game of football. Let's talk game of life now, Lindsay Rhodes. Okay. That's what we really wanted the kibitz about, especially here in the month of May. Eddie Spaghetti, just to bring everybody up to speed, he read the books. He's very proud. He read some books a while ago. And he said, he's over the moon about it. Everybody in his family, everybody who knows him, is proud that he read books. Oh, so great. Loves to tell you about it all. I read the books, so
right
therefore
after
I know better
Potter
than
Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings. Hit up the Game of Thrones.
I did Harry Potter. Lord of the Rings, I tried to read the first one, and I just didn't like it. It was kind of slow. I'm actually re-listening to the Game of Thrones book series now, too.
Now, that's a nerd.
Wow.
That's a Staten Island nerd right there. He doesn't look like one. You wouldn't know it to see him, right?
No. I wouldn't have pegged you for listening, re-listening to the Game of Thrones books.
Oh, but he goes on, and he, just so you know, Lindsay Rhodes, loved the episode. Just loved it. Over the moon. Best episode ever, he says. Okay.
Defend yourself.
I just think taking away the destruction and the devastation that happened, obviously, at the end, I thought...
Which, obviously, you can't, but okay.
No, but in terms of the dialogue, I could say, how the Jaime Cersei, that death scene was awesome. It fulfilled the prophecy.
Then say it.
I am saying.
You could say it.
She said in the beginning of the episode of how she did not want to leave the Red Keep. I'm going to stay here. It's not going to fall. It's never fallen. She stays in the Red Keep.
But she's supposed to be such
literally falls.
She's an evil genius, isn't she? Isn't she an evil tactician?
Not really. No. Who's ever described her as that?
I thought her father did. Didn't he say?
Tywin was, but not her.
I thought Tywin said, no, it's not that you're not smart enough. It's that you're too evil and untrustworthy.
I don't think I've ever taken her to be a mastermind.
I didn't mean in military terms, just in general. It's a little bit against character for her to be surprised by the way this went down.
Really.
Her brother Tyrion knew this definitely is not going to go her way. I'm 100% that Castle Rock. No. And by the way, his accent. He's a highly regarded actor, Tyrion. What's his name again?
Peter Dinklage.
Yes. His accent has veered into ridiculousness. He's not English anymore, and of course there are no English people in Westeros, but pretty close. And what was that weird accent? Well, that's not English. You sound like you sound like Namath after a few too many,
I've not noticed the accent thing.
I've not noticed.
Bothered me, but I'll keep an eye on that in the last episode ever.
I thought he was awesome in the episode too. He had some of the best.
That
scenes.
Was the best.
Him and Jamie together, even him with Varys, when he touched him before, obviously he was burned by the dragon. That was a great scene. There was so many really good
that
scenes
was good.
With Tyrion. Yeah. Even pleading to Daenerys when she's on the throne, just don't do it. They'll ring the bells, they'll surrender, and she did not care. I love the episode.
Golden fingers on the hand of Jamie Lannister. How many do you give this episode? Lindsay Rhodes.
Golden fingers on the hand of Jaime Lannister. What?
You know, like 1 to 5. They're, well, thumb counts.
I don't know. I'm torn because I've thoroughly enjoyed it, right? So the fan in me was just like, I didn't want it to end. And I wanted the next episode to start right away. So it wasn't like I was like, didn't enjoy it. But just when you I think for me, Game of Thrones is one of those things where you sit and you think about it afterward and you kind of try and find all of the hidden clues in there and figure it out. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought that I was annoyed that the season feels rushed. There are things that are happening that feel out of character and feel rushed in terms of character development. They've had 7 seasons prior to this season to plant seeds that, like, Daenerys might actually be crazy enough.
I think that's a little bit book reader stuff. Like, in the books, they have... Well, listen, this is not intended. They didn't make this TV show to give you a visual companion to what you read in the books. It's not possible.
Well, forget the books. I didn't read the books. I don't know anything about the books. My point is...
I'm not a dimwit, although I am dimwitted about this show. I have no idea what anybody's motivation is or anything else. I can't figure out what their relationships are.
You're missing the point, I think.
Lindsay's I'm not missing the point. I didn't see the signs that Daenerys was about to... I knew from the last episode or two that she was about to go mad.
Well, that's what I mean about it feeling rushed. Obviously, right. They telegraphed it this season. We all knew that she was going to become the Mad Queen in episode 5. We all knew that. But why did we know that? That's what bothers me. Like, nothing in this show has been telegraphed that dramatically.
And there's nothing to indicate in the preceding 7 seasons. Yes, Daenerys did some stuff where she...
What would you like her to do then? That's what I want to know. For people who say that, what should she have done in previous seasons?
Well, I mean, I don't know exactly about previous seasons to set up what she did in episode 5, but, like, she has gone out of her way to rescue women that were in danger of being raped.
That's my point. As
that human, then be like, you know what? I got everything I wanted, and I just feel a little angry at the moment, so I'm going to torch a lot of
It's exactly
people.
Right. It goes against character that she... It's one thing for her to get PO'd.
Right.
And fly that dragon.
By the way, straight to Cersei.
The best thing about the episode from a visual standpoint, perhaps overall, is the different points of view they took to see the devastation
of
the dragon.
The damage.
Whether it was close, when it was so ominous from the street level to watch that thing flying over the head and torching people, and it really looked good in terms of CGI and everything else. But then that long shot of from Cersei's point of view up in the tower, looking out into the city and seeing that dragon and seeing what it was doing block by block. All that stuff was great. But yes, you could also see, why isn't the dragon flying straight towards here and torching her instead
Absolutely.
Of doing the killing random people?
And here's the thing, Eddie, Mr. Spaghetti.
Mm.
What they did set up in a way that I thought made sense, and they could have just left it there, was that she would make a bad strategic decision, that a lot of innocent lives was an okay thing. That was acceptable collateral in order to militarily get where she needed to go. You could make the argument that if she did take the city, but it cost her innocent lives in order to get to that point, that that was still the sign of a bad leader. Because what do you ultimately want to rule? Why do you want to be in the... Because then it's all about power. She just wants the power. And it doesn't really matter that what she wanted the power for was to protect all of the people so that they weren't ruled by a tyrant. Why would she then just totally turn and be like, I'm going to kill a bunch of random people in a way that has nothing to do with me taking power? That makes no sense.
And also, by the way, Varys, to your point, Lindsay, Varys and Tyrion have the conversation. Well, what about them sharing power? As Tyrion would pronounce. I can't do his voice. But anyway,
True. They
have that whole discussion. Why don't they just share it? Why don't they both do it? Yeah, why don't they both do it? Why would Dany be so opposed to the idea? She was already with Khal Drogo, where he was like the king of those people. Why would it be like, yeah, there's no chance Dany would ever agree to that? Why would she be so motivated to be like, you can never tell anyone that you're in fact the rightful king here? Don't ever do that.
But
why would she care?
She can't just take it and like let the people live because Varys already leaked and Sansa and they all know that Jon is the rightful heir to the throne.
But the minute
that leaks out, it's going to be Jon. They're going to be like, well, we want Jon to be our leader anyway.
We're a power couple.
Like she's always That's not. That would never happen.
Like Bill and Hillary when they were in office together.
That would never happen.
To your point, the scene with her and John, where she said, "People don't love me, so they have to fear me," and then okay, so fear it will be, or whatever it was that she said. You're suggesting that she torched all the innocent people with a strat. That is a strategy, because now everyone will be so scared of her and know that she will take out innocent lives that they can't challenge her on the
throne.
Who's
left to challenge her? Nobody's even there to do anything anymore.
Like she said in previous season, she's going to take it by fire and blood. Like,
if she would have said to Jon Snow, listen, we'll let you and me look the north. They all love you up there, whatever. We'll go. But we're not going to hang around up there that much, except maybe we'll take some vacations
but
they
can't up rule there. Together. They're an aunt and a nephew. Like, if they could have gotten married if they weren't related, then
I wouldn't do that.
I've gotten the sense that people are very loose about that morally in
Westeros.
Well,
John's not, apparently.
Yeah, John's against it, and another big scene was like at
I see. I think he's decided not to like her. I don't think it's because that he's worried about genetic.
I do.
You think genetic outcomes scare him? Like, we shouldn't be because that can create trouble for our progeny. I don't think that's what he's thinking. I think he's just thinking like. If you're her, like, listen, they all love me down in those cool beach towns that I used to live in and stuff. We'll hang out there primarily. Once in a while, around Christmas or whatever, we'll fly up and be in the nice snowy climes. But otherwise, you know, we'll rule together. The Seven Kingdoms run, world's our oyster. I don't know. I think people skipped right over the idea that we were just supposed to accept. Like, nope, it would never happen. Those two couldn't rule together.
It would not.
Why not?
Because they've talked about it. He wouldn't marry her. And the people, the big scene was in episode 4 when they're all drinking and celebrating after living from the Battle of Winterfell. They all, you know, revolve around Jon. Even like Tormund, who's a wildling, he's a part of the Free Folk. He's like, you know, he did it. Everyone loves him. And she sees this. She knows she'll never, she was loved in like Essos, but she'll never be loved in Westeros like Jon would be. And he has too many houses that only want to serve under John. John would the population would be all under him. She would have no chance. So she had to burn him down.
So next week, Dany dies. Yes. Arya kills her.
I don't know about that, but
don't think Dany dies?
No, she dies.
Dany dies.
But I'm not sure if it's Arya anymore.
Well, what about the green eye thing? Like, why not? Why do they keep showing us that she has green eyes?
It's possible, but they've like loosely followed some prophecies. I mean, I'd be fine with it. I'm not against it.
So who does?
I'm not sure.
I
don't know.
Let's hear Lindsay's
theory. I think Sansa ends up on the throne because I think that they've also shown us in a subtle way. Like, and maybe then that's the whole point of all this, right? Like, we've been following certain people's developments and how they've become leaders, but she's been a little bit more under the radar. And that scene in episode 4 where she said, "I'd still be a little bird if none of this had happened." So it's fine that all this happened. She started off the series wanting to be in a position of power. She wanted to be the beautiful queen for all the wrong reasons. Now, wouldn't it be perfect if she ended up on the throne and she actually is somebody fit to rule because she's been through all of these things? And she's been the person who said, how are we going to feed all of these people? Our men need rest. We can't just storm off and go. Like, we need to think logically. She said, your mistake to Tyrion was trusting Cersei. Like, I wouldn't have done that. That was a strategic error. So I think that they've shown us how she would be a good leader. And I think that John, the twist will be that John sacrifices himself for her. And that's because he knows that she can't lead if he's around because of the same Dany conundrum. And that's that everyone loves John and wants him to be in charge. But we know John has to die because he died already and he needs to just come back to fulfill his
role. That's right. I missed that part. The witch told the eye patch guy, she said the eye patch and about herself, we were both just back for this purpose. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow was brought back for a purpose. He has to sacrifice.
To live happily ever after.
Right. And I think that maybe there's something where Grey Worm. Somebody said, "Is it true that Arya can't wear the faces anymore? Is she done with that?"
The scene was like she didn't want to become just a faceless man. She wanted to become Arya Stark. So when she was talking to the Hound, he's like, "Get out of here! You're going to die." She didn't want to be like him. So she's like going back to becoming Arya Stark, which is why I thought that maybe she wouldn't kill Daenerys. What I'm selfishly hoping is like that Arya comes back, Jon sees her all like, you know, almost burned alive, and then he's like, "You almost killed my sister," and then he goes after Dany himself. I love that. But it could. I think Tyrion might be a person who could either use the crossbow or something against Daenerys, or maybe he might take out the dragon somehow because the dragon, I think, has to go.
Long story short, I feel like talking to Spaghetti makes me like the episode a little bit more than I did.
Yeah.
But I also think, and, you know, as I try to throw out my issues with the show, you guys are both kind of batting them aside. I'm with you. Sansa takes the throne. I think her ex-husband, Tyrion, is her hand. I think she gets the throne. Or she rules the North. I think the dragon will literally, that Jon Snow will instruct, I think it'll be like one of those things where, like, who does the dog like better ultimately? Like, let's go to opposite ends of the room and call to the dog and see who it comes to.
Like
that dragon, I think that maybe she'll say, like, burn Jon Snow. He's a bad guy. And the dragon will be like, I'm not going to do it, lady. You know? But I'm your mother. And it's like, you know, well, all right, but I still don't want to burn Jon Snow.
The dragon has to go because the dragon's sort of representative of, like, nuclear weapons or something like that. Like, it's just, it's the nuclear option that's never good. Like, let's go back to fighting fairly.
And Dany cannot lose as long as she has a living dragon. So he has to kind of, that dragon has to die practically. I think, and by the way, Grey Worm feels like he's fully in. He doesn't seem, he is not. You know, versus Davos or Snow or anybody else. He's a killing machine. He's just running through with his spear thing, which, by the way, if you were in battle, which weapon would you want the most? A sword, a bow and arrow, or, I mean, I would want a dragon, but I mean,
John's sword, Longclaw, a Valyrian steel sword, I'd take.
See, what a nerd.
Yeah,
like, that just took a nerdy turn. Like, as we say this,
it's his tone that makes it nerdy. Well,
exactly.
It's the tone. I mean, it's
the Valyrian.
It's Valyrian steel.
That's kind of steel.
So it's the Ladainian Tomlinson.
Yeah, that's right.
Of swords. I feel that.
Do the wildlings come back?
I wouldn't want that big stick.
Does somebody come back to, like, save the day?
They all have to.
They need somebody to fight.
Well, all the, because again, Varys did a great thing by sending out the word. I think the North will see that, and they'll all come to be under Jon. The show also ends in the North. I think it's going to end in the North.
Maybe Brienne does turn around and she's like, you know what? You're here for, you're Mr. Right Now, Redbeard. And then they go up North together. And then.
You have some awful takes.
These are great ideas that I have. So Tyrion, maybe Grey Worm kills Jon Snow.
He's no shot.
No shot. Why no shot?
He's not even as like a speaking character in the books. They wouldn't waste, Jon wouldn't die from him. It would be.
Unless John allows himself to die from him.
That's right.
Like, again, I think it has to be a noble death.
I get the face to give it to the face so that he can get close. Or maybe Jon Snow kills Grey Worm and then Arya puts on that face to get close to Dany so she can stick her with the needle.
George R. R. Martin said the story, it's a good gray finish. I think what makes it more tragic is that John has to live and, like, rule because he doesn't want to do that. I think that's almost, like, the more Shakespearean tragic ending. Like, if he died, he would be happier, if that makes sense. I don't think John dies.
I think Arya, I think the show ends legitimately. I think Arya now has turned around. She's back to, now she's going to track down Gendry, and they will live happily ever after. I think
Gendry has to come back into it, but I don't think it's with Arya. I don't know what it is. Does Sansa have to marry him? Because now he has a claim because he's a Baratheon, and now we've made him a lord. So does she do the smart thing about, like, combining houses? And it's a loveless marriage,
theory,
but it's a power play, and we're going to bring everybody together, and here's...
In theory, if King's Landing still has the throne, I don't think there'll be a throne.
I think the dragon has to physically torch the throne, burn it to the ground.
I think there won't be seven kingdoms. Oh, be separated.
And then Fat Sam is tasked by his pal, John, you have to rewrite. We're erasing human history. And we're starting fresh. The whole thing is over. There's no more Seven Kingdoms. There's no more of this jive of this war. These wars are going to be the end of us all. They nearly were. Sam, rewrite human history. All right, Jon Snow.
Oh my.
And then that's the end. Do you think if Jon Snow would have shared a bed with Dany, that none of this would have happened?
Would have helped.
She wouldn't have gone crazy.
Right. Yeah, right. It would have definitely helped.
That's right. Think about that.
He only sees her as a queen. It would have definitely helped. Although I think that once Varys committed treason and Tyrion kind of crossed her, I think she was pretty much at her end anyway.
Jon Snow does that the same weekend that Alyssa Milano makes her proclamation. Maybe he's Team Milano. Who knows?
But, like, for Spaghetti a show that has been as feminist in nature as this show has been, to have her go crazy because she's ultimately scorned by a lover, like, that's kind of annoying.
Well, I think it's more to do with the Targaryen family. Not just, like they're always kind of just a crazy kind of family. Like they even have a separate books, like a book written just about that family, because they're always this crazy family. They have a lot of crazy
people. I know, but for the last straw, like it's just a bad look, right? Like if the whole thing has been so almost consciously like pro female, like power and strength and coming into your own and owning it, and to take the character they built up perhaps the most in that manner, and then to have her have that be the final straw, like another final straw.
That's why Arya must
kill her. But
to
have that happen where like now I'm just, I can't live with my love.
You can't have Jon Snow.
Now I have to kill innocent people.
It's physically
weird. There's no coming back from this.
Right. That's lame. Think of the visual of Jon Snow, a guy, smaller guy, but nevertheless killing Dany. That would be a bad look. It's got to be Arya for practical reasons, but also to your point, the spirit of the show. Last thing is this. What's his name again? Qyburn? I think he's the least celebrated. First of all, his death was great.
Who?
The guy who's always with Cersei. The guy.
Euron?
Oh,
that guy.
Your Grace.
Oh.
We should leave the keep now. You know,
I feel like that guy just popped up randomly. He's one of those characters.
No,
a million characters and you can't keep track of them all. For me, he was a guy that just, I was like, where did you come from?
He made the mountain
Pycelle.
Back from the dead.
So he was the guy that worked down in the dungeons
and then
all of a sudden ended up at
He
her,
found the wildfire and then he did stuff with the
But he,
the
by the way, that guy, he's, you know, all these songs sung about how powerful the Night King is. He can raise the dead in greater quantity than Qyburn can. But you still, if you hit them with a sword, they fall over. Qyburn created the mountain. He got stuck with a knife in the head, and that wasn't enough to stop him. He creates a better version of undead than even the Night King did.
That's
Where's his
point.
Parade?
That's
you know?
Point.
And then he gets killed by the guy he created, by his own monster.
Do you think anyone's still listening to this?
I think people have tweeted already about it. They're excited for what?
Lindsay.
Because the Twitter battles between me and Dave, because Dave didn't like it and I liked it a lot.
I liked it fine. I'm not abjectly denouncing it, and I didn't. I just said I thought that there were plenty of flaws.
What are the over-under on lines that Jon Snow has had this season?
Oh, like, what about
he has
Cersei?
Not talked.
Cersei never spoke.
It's just
spoke.
Been brooding. You're right.
She had nothing to say. Jamie Lannister, what was the whole point of him making time with Brienne then? That was lame, too.
There's a lot of stupid things in the show, yeah. I mean,
Euron
was a waste,
Why did they waste our time with him?
Bad.
That whole, he was not worthy of
medieval
that,
Bam Margera,
that fight
they killed
to
him.
Death with Jamie.
Yeah,
like,
it's just
that
fan
is
service.
Not.
It's bad.
Spaghetti, even you pointed it
Jamie.
Out. And by the way,
there are flaws all over.
Nice
but,
serendipity for Euron that, he jumped off the boat just as the dragon was torching it. And he just so happened to land in that little sliver of beach so he could confront Jaime Lannister.
It's a shame because he's in the books, he's a crazy character. In the show, they just did not have to do
well,
with
Well, good for him. He
time.
Was only 3 miles out to sea when the dragon blew up his ship, and he was cloaked head to toe in leather and boots. Yeah, he swam. He comes out of the sea. Jaime Lannister, like, let's fight now. Like, what?
That happened with Grey Worm and everybody when
Missandei was captured. Yeah, they all fell ashore together. And
they all swam up under the same shore.
A lot of liberties taken.
And it was a shore that was within swimming distance but was no threat.
Right.
Like, they were not threatened there. This was a totally safe place to swim. Mm-hmm.
This is something interesting that I just came across that I'm seeing, that Bran is the overwhelming favorite to end up on the Iron Throne.
How would be the word? Here's my prediction about Bran, and then we'll go.
Who, an overwhelming favorite by who? I'm sorry, I want to hear your point.
I know.
What?
It's Vegas.
It's our friends in the desert have him. Yeah. It's not even close. It's very overwhelming.
Here's what my prediction is, Lindsay. I think that, but I don't know the properties of what happens with Bran, what he can do, but I think he has to go into the dragon's head, become the dragon, and fly him into the sea or into a cliff or something to kill him, thereby killing himself.
That's true. Yeah, that would happen, yeah.
That's what's going to be. He's got to sacrifice himself.
If he does warg, he would kill. But I'm not sure if they're going to even get into the whole warging thing because they haven't shown it enough.
Why in the world would Bran be in charge at the end? Brant is useless.
So that we don't feel like, man, I hope they do more of these seasons. Like, oh, it's all about Brant. I'm out. Nobody would ever watch the show.
It might be. They might move because there's no capital anymore. They might move it to, say, Winterfell. And then it always must be a Stark in Winterfell. Technically, he's a Stark.
Sansa.
And he's a unfortunately, the male takes the.
Whatever, that's done.
I agree.
Not even,
Sansa
not,
would be better.
He has said, I'm not a Stark anymore.
He doesn't want to do it. Yeah, he's
but
a threat.
But he's literally said, I'm not a Stark anymore.
Something weird may be up. If I don't know.
It's Sansa.
Very
Vegas.
Odd, though.
Come on, catch up.
It seems
Brand's in the white horse. I'll buy that.
If you have a more boring conclusion to this show to say, like, yeah, the guy who doesn't talk and rolls his eyes
and
back
then,
in his head.
And then the last line is, I'll be going now. Eyes roll back.
If they do some jive, if they do some variation on that this has all been just some Brand dream, I'm going to be very cross. You think that's where it's going?
He wakes up at the base of the tree.
Yeah. I fell out of
a
window.
No, this is
I was pushed from a window, and after that, I've forgotten everything.
As bad as like Euron was and a couple of the characters, Bran, who they build up in the original story to be this very important figure, unless the ending is insane and he is on the throne, if there is a throne, they did him
now
disservice.
We're back to the books. I think that's a good place to end it. All right, Eddie Spaghetti, well argued.
Brother.
Nicely done. Lindsay Rhodes, always a pleasure. Let's revisit this when we find out who the Hard Knocks team is.
I can't wait.
We'll do that. And will you give the old man my best?
Yes.
Your husband? there are few people at NFL functions I like running into more than Mr. Rhodes. Delightful. Delightful fella. Handsome devil, too. Lindsay Rhodes, always a pleasure to see you. There's the music. That means it's time for us to go. We'll be back with... Do some lyrics. Brent is gonna roll back, and then he is gonna die.
I'll be going now.
Here comes Jon Snow. He's gonna kill Dany, the mother
oh my
of
gosh.
Dragons.
On Mother's Day.